Okay.
For the record, this is the July 9th, 2014 Treasure Island Development Authority Board meeting. Director Richardson?
Here.
Director Mazzola?
Here.
Director Dunlop?
Here.
Director Samaha? Director Sun?
Here.
Director Aragon? Supervisor Kim? We have a quorum.
Thank you. I always wanted to say thank you to all of you for your time coming to this meeting, and we're going to have an important meeting today, so we appreciate your time. Before we proceed with our calendar, I have an important presentation to make for someone that has spent decades trying to bring Treasure Island development to what it is today. We have to pause to underscore the commitment and the time that individuals, especially this person, has made to this important project that is going to define San Francisco for years and years to come. So we are very pleased that Commissioner, our director, Mr. Oberlin, is sitting there, humbly out there, and he's leaving us, but believe me, every time I come to City Hall, I look around, he's here. He's very well involved in San Francisco, in a lot of projects and activities because people trust him. He's passionate about what he does. It has been a pleasure and an honor to serve beside Mr. Oberlin. And so I am going to now make a presentation, and I'm going to ask our commissioners also for the group photos to come and wish this great man.
Could we also make some statements?
Absolutely.
Like now or later?
Go ahead, Commissioner, it's what I'm preparing. Yes.
So, you know, in the early 1990s, I was on the Redevelopment Agency Commission, and John Elbling was always on that other side of the commission, criticizing us or actually urging us to do the right thing. And so finally, I get to the Treasure Island Development Authority, I'm going to be on the same side of the table with him, and then he quits. So so I hope it's not on account of my coming on the Treasure Island Development Authority. I had looked forward to working with you, John, but I'm sure that your legacy is here, and I hope that we can continue your advocacy on the Treasure Island Development Authority.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Commissioner Dunlop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've known John for a long time, and likewise sat on, I guess, the other side when I was on the Redevelopment Commission, although I didn't really see it as the other side. John had so much information and was so devoted to affordable housing and affordable housing for seniors, and really that was one of the things that was very important for the Redevelopment Commission also. So it was, as opposed to being adversarial, it was really like a working relationship and getting incredible community input via John and then the crowds he would sometimes bring to the meetings. So, not his word was really good, but I know he often found that busloads of people asking us to support his view was helpful, too. So John has been a fighter for decades, and I'm going to miss you on this commission, but I sure hope you haven't retired from public life and hope to see you around a lot. Okay, good.
Thank you, Commissioner, and Commissioner Mazzola.
Yeah, so I've been on this board for 3.5 years, and I would like to thank you, John, for the one time that you agreed with me. I appreciate that. But in all seriousness, thanks for setting the pace for us and showing me the ropes of what happens here. And we look forward to you having a great retirement or whatever it is that you're doing. I hope to see you around, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. And I'd like to, before I make the presentation, I know we have partners. If any of you would like to make a comment, and please feel free to do that. I'm looking at Cheryl. Yeah, please come up.
Oh,
John. Well, this is a kind of a surreal moment, actually, because I've taken John for granted for all these years. As you know, John was a founding member of the Treasure Island Homeless Development Initiative, and it was John's knowledge of land use planning and redevelopment processes that really helped to strengthen our organization so that we could achieve what we've been able to achieve, mostly, you know, have a lot of folks in the homeless service and homeless policy, but really knowing land use issues is really something that was unique that John brought to our table. And then, of course, he was appointed to the Development Authority in 1998 and had to resign from the tie-dye executive committee. So I will say I've been working on this project for almost 20 years now with John, and he's not retiring, he's not going away or anything, so I'm sure we'll still be talking about Treasure Island for years to come. And we are going to be honoring John and his incredible service and advocacy at our October 9th fundraiser this year. And so I'll keep my remarks brief because after a 20-year history, there's a lot I could say, but we'll keep it for that moment. And just thank John. And so just this is a very small token, couldn't come with nothing, just to something that lives and grows like all of the efforts that John has been able to sow the seeds for. So it's somewhat symbolic, and thank you, John.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. Ms. Ruth Gavranis, nice to see you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Ruth Gavranis. It was back in February of 1996. For some reason I'll never understand, I attended my first meeting of the Citizens Reuse Committee, appointed by then Mayor Frank Jordan, and ever since then attended almost every meeting of the CRC and then the Treasure Island Task Force. It couldn't be a development authority until after the Migdon Bill passed, and then almost every meeting of this august body, as well as the CAB. And during all that time, watching so many changes in people and in the nature of the project and the size of the project, and it was so very valuable during all that time to have the institutional memory that John Alperling provided for all of us. And I think it's a real tragedy to lose him from this board, and I'm really grateful to have been able to observe all of the fabulous questions and insights and knowledge that he's had over the years. So I really do hope that John stays very closely involved. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any other public comments? Seeing none, Commissioner, please come forward.
Well, thank you very much, everybody. You know, first, I just want to, of course, thank you current members of the commission, but also all the previous ones that we work with, and, of course, Miriam and her staff today, but also all the previous staff, everybody that worked in good faith on the Treasure Island project to make it a really tremendous community building and civic development project. There's been a lot of people involved. I'm sure if you did a list, it would be several dozen, three or four dozen people who made important contributions. So I just want to acknowledge that. It's so much work by so many people over these many years. And actually, it's much more comfortable to be back here on this side of the rail. I've stood here several hundred times over the years and addressing various commissions, including Redevelopment Agency, many times down the hall. And I'd just like to take this opportunity to note what I think is important to bear in mind as you go forward, because there is, in my opinion, three fortuitous circumstances for this project that resulted in it being the best redevelopment project of all in the city. That's in my opinion. I know with two former commissioners here from Redevelopment Agency, you might have other favorites. But let me explain my thinking. The first is fortuitous circumstance was that the Base Closure Act of 1991 included a requirement for homeless housing component in this base closure project. That requirement no longer exists. But because it existed at that time, from the very beginning, it was always understood, always committed by the city, top to bottom, that homeless social justice for homeless people and directing the opportunities of this project to address homelessness was going to be a fundamental purpose of the project. That's unique, and it really gives it a special basis. That's one of the most difficult problems in the city that no other redevelopment area quite had at its founding as this did. The second fortuitous circumstance is that it is the interim phase. Because the base had so many, so much housing, so many buildings that could be purposefully used in the interim period from the beginning until future development, which was originally be 7 years, but it's going to wind up being closer to 20 in some cases, made it possible to undertake from the beginning. The project had to be a community building kind of project. The residents are there. They need community services in an isolated circumstance. The commercial buildings provide space for businesses that otherwise probably couldn't afford to locate in San Francisco at all. It enabled a whole organic process of building a neighborhood and a community to start long before anything new ever was opened. And that's unique. Redevelopment projects typically start like Trans Bay, you know, from Bear Ground or Mission Bay, and don't have that advantage. And as a result, with the important factor of tie-dye being required for the homeless services part of this, there was a community building organization, a nonprofit, that has worked with the staff all these decades to actually implement real neighborhood engagement, participation. And the staff also has always taken the point of view of being neighborhood managers, not just some bureaucrat in City Hall. So the staff, unlike maybe redevelopment staff of old, worries about things like community service or police services, or why is the power going out? You know, all those things that matter every day to a neighborhood. In my opinion, that's the right way to do redevelopment. I wish there was a tie-dye for Mission Bay. I wish there was a tie-dye or for Trans Bay, for that matter, because there's no agent there to actively engage all aspects of the community as tie-dye has done. And on the other side, there's also no dedicated staff, as there is Treasure Island, that works on-site, that is very familiar with the project and its everyday realities to make it a better place to live, yeah, and realize its best possibilities. So that was the second thing. The third thing is the most surprising of all. For whatever reason, Mayor Brown decided to pull Treasure Island out of redevelopment and set up an independent agency. And what that has done, perhaps unforeseen, but has created, in fact, a single-purpose organization, all of you as a commission, the staff, whose focus is only this one project and has been really committed to making it the best they can. That kind of focus is missing, in my opinion, from some of the other redevelopment projects around the city. And it's been very fortuitous. So when you add all these fortuitous items together, that's why I think this is the best redevelopment project of all. It's certainly doing the best job of community building of any of them. And I do speak, you know, with a lot of background in that field. So I just want to thank you all again for your time and effort, and urge you to continue forward in that direction. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. And please be well and rest assured as you look at us here, given all the decades and decades of planning and redevelopment that each and every one of us here. And thank you for mentioning Mayor Willie Brown when I was coming up. He was actually coming in the same building today. He's in this building. And I think some of us that have had the privilege to serve under him, espousing those kind of principles that you accentuated on, know very well how much all the things you mentioned are important into making any project, a viable project. So we wish you well, and we'll definitely will cross paths with you as we move along. Thank you, sir. Let's go. Next in on the agenda.
Item number 2, general public comment. This item is to allow members of the public to address the Treasure Island Development Authority Board on matters that are within the subject matter jurisdiction of the Authority Board and that do not appear on today's agenda. In addition to general public comment will be held during each item on the agenda. Members of the public may address the board for up to 3 minutes. You will hear a single chime when there are 30 seconds remaining. Prior to making your comments, please state your name and the organization you are representing, if any, for the record.
Okay, are there any public comments? Okay, seeing none. Okay, thank you.
Item number 3A, report by Director of Island Operations.
Good afternoon. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
I have the following operational issues to report, or John Oberlin operation issues to report, because this is really what he was speaking about in terms of what we're doing in the interim. So under public safety, your crime stats reported are found in tab 3, and the Southern Station newsletters are found in tab 4. For the residential area, we did have a record, a recorded 6 burglaries this month. And indeed, this is an uptick in crime, which we typically associate with summer being school being out this summer. Unsecured valuables and cars continue to be a crime of opportunity in our neighborhoods, just like the city car break-ins are at a statistical high, but mainly in the special event district. The community continues to be diligent in informing residents how to prevent crimes of opportunity in the neighborhood. And indeed, Community Watch has created a summer safety tip flyer for the community, which provides information on how to keep your unit secure. And this month, they also did a tip on focusing on how to report suspicious activities. Titus staff created a visitor's flyer. Those coming into the island are reminded to keep their valuables out of their parked cars. Another public safety note, thousands of visitors converged on Treasure Island this past weekend for a fireworks display on the bay. The staff coordinated with the police department, MTA, California Highway, and Caltrans. The police and MTA parking control officers had a significant presence in an effort to ensure public safety, as well as to maintain a reasonable flow of traffic and also to protect our residential neighborhood. The police actually closed Treasure Island at 8:45 on the 4th. Tida applied for and was permitted by Caltrans to allow for the closure on the westbound after the fireworks event was over. Also, I'd like to report that this past month, a community meeting was held on the 18th. The agenda included a review of the board agenda items affecting the community, updates on island happenings and special events, and also the Navy survey. Both the Community Watch and DPH participated in that. And the community meeting is really a way to, it's a form of information exchange for those who are not able to attend meetings here at City Hall. There was one unscheduled power outage this month affecting 2 buildings. PUC crews were dispatched and 311 notified all. The cause of the outage was a failed transformer. Under financial reports in your package represents 12 months. As the fiscal year drew to a close, we have conferred with John Stewart and reviewed our commercial income. I am happy to report that we have exceeded our revenue projections of $8.8 million this year. In addition, we anticipate savings. So while Title won't receive a full picture of cash position until late September, we are confident that we'll end the year with reserve fund as we had projected for our fiscal year 15-16. And lastly, in your package, you'll find a list of operational accomplishments for the fiscal year. How well we manage our budget speaks directly on how we are able to deliver those services to our residents and visitors alike. Grouped in the category of quality of life, public safety, and leasing, among others, this list is informative as well as it is diverse. And briefly, Tida directed funds for a health clinic this past year, for after-school programs, for childcare, for summer programs. We invested in energy emergency preparedness plans and resident leadership training as well as job training. We supported resident events like National Night Out, Back to School, Halloween, among luncheons and barbecues. We supported the Tie-Dye Museum Lecture Series, exhibits for the 75th anniversary of the Golden Gate Exposition. On the physical side, we made improvements through vegetation management plans. We improved utility reliability. We refreshed community facilities, including the Ship Shape, the gym, the CASA, the child care center, and our tennis courts. Under public safety, we focused on pedestrian safety and traffic calming, and we provided a secondary private security force for additional residential protection. Without the attention to revenue by John Stewart and the commercial leasing staff, the breadth and depth of what TIDA has accomplished would not be possible. And I'd like to congratulate the staff for their dedicated public service work. Under quality of life issues, we did have the opening of the nurse clinic celebration on June 25th. A great crowd, estimated 125 people. Thanks, Director Dunlap, for attending that opening. The fire department conducted asthma screenings, and the kids played in a bounce ball for 2 hours. There were plenty of health and wellness giveaways. DPH staff and the clinic nurses were on hand and able to engage the residents right then and there to educate them and the community on the services and the benefits. Since the clinic opened its doors in April, it began twice weekly free services for blood pressure, blood checks, sinuses, allergy, immunizations. Over 40 residents have taken part in that use. The YMCA summer programs continues this month. 70 kids are enrolled in that summer camp with an average daily attendance of 40. TIDA has supplemented that Y staff and provided employment opportunities for 5 island youth. Also supplementing at the teen scene, TIDA has hired a fitness coordinator for the summer program as a summer program coordinator, and he began July 1st to provide on hand twice a week to engage the group in weightlifting, cardio, and more. Under service request, we had several service requests this month that were associated with related street lights and muni service, customer service. Under commercial leasing, those things are found in tab 3 of your binder. 3 new subleasing opportunities and 6 special event permits were signed since our last meeting. Filming activities included still photography with the San Francisco Magazine and advertising for a Subaru. Under leasing housing activities, the Villages is now conducting a moisture evaluation of each unit to be better informed about unit condition reports and to plan for capital improvements. Special events, the Treasure Island Flea Market continue to attract great crowds. Their theme last month was Rock the Summer, and it was family focused. And under shout outs, I'd like to give a shout out to Peter Somerville, who not only organized the nurse clinic opening, but also served as head chef, serving about 250 hot dogs and burgers that evening. And under reminders, just a reminder that August, we do take a summer break and we'll return September 10th. Madam Chair, that concludes my remarks.
Thank you very much for a great report. I'm going to hear from the commissioners. Commissioner Dunlap.
Yes, I would just like to comment on a couple of the items because they're all pretty good and great advancements, I think. First thing, something that nobody mentioned anything about was power outages, because there haven't been any or any unannounced outages for some time, and you just don't hear that. So that's so great. I think, you know, as a person who lives on the islands and someone who, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago now, it was sort of a regular event. The fact that it is so rare now is just great. I was at the clinic opening, and that is something that myself and other neighbors have been really hoping for and are really pleased with that and glad that it's churning along and seeing lots of clients. So that's just so great. So I want to thank the staff for that. And indeed, the burgers were great, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Commissioner Fisk, please.
Yes. Marion, thank you for that report. I noticed in the materials that were given to us, there was also a grand jury report on rising sea levels, and it was a analysis of the issue of rising sea levels and what various departments in the city are doing about it, especially for the future. And this issue is particularly an important one for Treasure Island because we are naturally lower. But I noticed that it did, in some ways, give us a little pat on the back in that the measures which have been adopted and in the environmental impact report does call for an addressing of that issue and that there are mechanisms that are being suggested which the development plan will incorporate to address the issue of rising sea levels. And what I'd like to ask is that at some point in the future, for, again, a refresher for the commission, I was not there at the time that the EIR was actually passed, I would like to have maybe a report for us as well as for the public as to what the plan is to address this issue.
Thank you. We'll certainly do that, and I believe Director Bob Beck would be remarking on that report after my report.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you again to Director of Operations and Mr. Somerville, your staff. You need to be commended. I think this report in detail really underscores the importance that TIDER has attributed to the quality of life for the residents on the island, and I'm looking at every category here, and I think with the revenues that we have, I'd like to see even, I know we're doing great, more funding for towards the children programs that we have, you know, there. So as we get more revenues, we can do some goodies and, you know, help those kids out and the agencies that support them. So even though we have two functions on TIDER, again, enhancing the quality of lives of the residents and also development, and we're doing well in both to make sure that we pay attention to what's going on. So thank you, staff, for this wonderful report. At this point, let's have public comments on Director of Operations, Miriam Sayers' report. Okay, there doesn't seem any. Thank you. Next thing on the agenda.
Item number 3B, report by Treasure Island Director.
Good morning, Chair, members of the board. June was a very eventful month on the development side of things. As Director Sen mentioned, the civil grand jury did issue a report where they had looked at various agencies and programs citywide and the measures that they were taking to address sea level rise. And Treasure Island was recognized as one of the projects that had taken meaningful and significant steps to incorporate sea level rise into its planning effort. And there were no findings or recommendations relative to the program at Treasure Island. We also, in June, most significantly started the surveying process to survey the residential housing, and the Navy will provide an update later on the agenda. But I just did want to acknowledge the planning work that has been done by the Navy and their contractor, CBI, and also the tremendous support that the Navy has received from all of the housing providers, Swords to Plowshares, HealthRight 360, Catholic Charities, Community Housing Partnership, the Villages, Rubicon. There's been tremendous effort by the housing providers to assist in the noticing of residents and providing access to all of the units. Next week, we will reach the halfway point in the survey where half of the units will have been completed. And also next week, we expect to complete the last of the tie-dye units so that we'll just be finishing out the remainder of the Villages units in the remainder of July and August, and by the time we meet in September, we should have concluded the surveys. Also this month, the Board of Supervisors on June 24th approved the EDC MOA The resolution was signed by the mayor on June 26th, and on July 2nd, the Navy and TIDA executed the MOA. So we're moving forward with the steps to transfer the property in October of this year. Also significantly, on July 1st, the Navy issued the historical radiological assessment supplemental technical memoranda. This is an update from the original historical radiological assessment that was done in 2006 and incorporates a great deal of additional information from field investigations, archival research that the Navy has done over the last 8 years. Calling it a memorandum kind of doesn't quite do it justice. The document is over 100 pages in length, plus tables, figures, exhibits, appendices. So it's a very significant update on the information related to the radiological history of the island. Next week, the Navy is scheduled to issue its draft site management plan for the entire island for 2014. We'll go through review with the various agencies and expect to be finalized in the fall. In August, the Navy anticipates issuing the draft finding of suitability to transfer, which is going to be necessary for that to be reviewed and concurred to by CDPH and DTSC before the end of October so that we can move forward with the transfer as we intend. Also, in terms of planning for the property conveyances, we've been working on the legal descriptions, defining the boundaries for the preparation of the legal descriptions, reviewing on and off-island utility easements, and planning for the land trust exchange with the State Lands Commission that will follow the property conveyance. We've had multiple meetings with the SFPUC to prepare for development, wastewater enterprises, CDD, HECI, on the design of the power, water, and wastewater facilities for the new island, as well as meetings with other agencies, the Department of Public Works, the Arts Commission, the Fire Department, and BCDC. We've also met this month with the SFPUC to plan for the interim utility projects that I reported on at the last meeting and to review the utility rates that are being charged to Treasure Island customers. We'll come to you with a further report on that in September. There are some customers whose rates have been automatically adjusted since we put a 2009 MOU with the SFPUC, but there's other customers whose rates have not been adjusted, and so there will be some significant adjustments that we need to make. Also, the adjustments that have been put in place since 2009, automatic adjustments, have not kept up with the commodity costs of the water and the power that PUC has been procuring on our behalf, and so there will be additional adjustments we need to make for that purpose. We've also met this month with Caltrans, the San Francisco County Transportation Authority, MTC, and others to plan for the completion of the Eastern Span bike path, which is expected to reach the island in November of 2015, and for how those bicyclists will get about the island while we are still in the process of developing the permanent facilities that we plan to deliver to the island. And then most finally, this Monday of this week, the Court of Appeals affirmed the San Francisco Superior Court ruling upholding the CEQA analysis for the Treasure Island project. After that decision is final in 30 days, the plaintiff would have a 10-day window if they chose to appeal it to the California Supreme Court. But consistent with their previous ruling, we don't anticipate anything that would delay the start of development. And that concludes my report for this month.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Bob. It's a great day, actually, because looking at all the items that you mentioned, this project is on track. I read the appeals court ruling in detail, but one thing that we need to convey, and it has implications as we move forward, whether we're talking about sea rise or any infrastructure or cleanup issues, the court found that the environmental report, which was being challenged, that there were enough mitigations, that flexibility, this report has enough flexibility. So should we proceed along and we discover anything along the process that the plan presented to the public of transparent in the process has what it takes for everyone involved in the project to go back, to revisit issues, to make the appropriate recommendations and mitigations. That is very powerful. So it's saying that we're not just going blindly and that every step has some corrective measures to really look at what you are doing, whether you're talking about the transportation, if you look at the TDM that was being proposed, having feasibility studies at every phase, and so that if we find out that the peak hours in phase one is not doing well, then we scale back. It's in the EDCMOA. It says, what are we doing here? Let's look at this. Maybe let's try this and all that. That is very key as you convey in late terms to everyone out there that you name it, it is going to be under scrutiny and people will debate and undo the analysis and make corrective measures. I found that to be very powerful. And it is on that statement of the flexibility that is written in that document that the court says, no, this project has what it takes. In fact, it has gone beyond the call of duty to do that. So again, want to thank you. And I see a deputy attorneys here, to Mark Sullivan there, and Alicia Cabrera. Everything we're doing here on TIDER, in all of the things that you're talking about, we have our own legal counsel, and we have the Navy. There are all the technical things involved. We've just done the EDCMOA. You're talking about the forest, findings of suitability for this project. And since you came on board, absolutely, we've gone beyond even our own expectations. So we want to thank you, and we're all going to have to stay focused and to, at the end of the year, for the conveyance to take place. So thank you, sir, for all your efforts and to the attorneys that are also working alongside with you and the staff. So Mr. Patient, yeah.
Mr. Beck, thank you for that report. I'm just wondering if you can give us a little bit of the timeline for development. What are we expecting in terms of the progress of that?
Yeah, overall, right now, the development schedule over the next year, the developer will be preparing the major phase and subphase applications for review with the City of San Francisco. The intention is to bring the major phase application to this board before the end of the year for review and approval by the January-February timeframe, and then build upon that with the subphase application. The major phase and subphase applications analyze, in particular, the infrastructure improvements to be constructed as part of the first phase and subphase of development. In terms of the actual property transfer, the Navy is shooting for an offering of the property by the end of October of this year, and then working over the next 60 days to close the transfer. So that by the end of the year, end of the calendar year, we will have effected the transfer from the Navy to TIDA of the northern half of Yerba Buena Island and roughly 60% of the area of Treasure Island. We then need to go through a trust exchange with the State Lands Commission, and we're scheduling for July 24th to go up to Sacramento and meet with State Lands Commission staff on the changes that have occurred in the transfer phasing since the MOU was with the State Lands Commission was executed in 2010. So we will be planning for that to occur after the transfer comes from the Navy to us. And then with that completed and with the approval of the subphase application, we expect the middle of 2015 the developer will move into field activities. Beginning with demolition activities and site improvements on Yerba Buena Island, but also moving down to fairly short order to the western waterfront on Treasure Island. The early improvements are going to be focused on infrastructure. So during that first 18 months, there will be site work and the reconstruction of McCullough Road, as well as geotechnical work on Treasure Island. The first vertical development, the first housing, is anticipated to begin construction in 2017, and the first units being available for sale in the third quarter of 2018. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the process to the first first occupancy. Overall, the developer is working on a build-out schedule that would complete all of the development by 2030. So that's a full build-out. In terms of the transfer schedule with the Navy, the last area designated for transfer to TIDA is Site 12, where the residential housing currently is on the island. And the Navy expects to offer that by the end of 2021, so that in the first quarter of 2022, we would complete the land transfer to TIDA, and we would continue working with the developer over the intervening years to transfer the property to them for development.
Well, it's good to know that there's the possibility of starting construction in 2017. But it's certainly going to take decades for the full project to be completed. Focus really is on what happens to the public realm. And as the developer goes forward in doing the design, certainly there's infrastructure, but there's also roads, there's bike lanes, there's street improvements, there's planting, landscape, there's artwork that might happen. I would like for them to give us some idea of what is in their thinking and in the plans, not at the end when they've already finished doing the planning with their subconsultants and then we're expected to do a rubber stamp, but rather to give us an interim report, particularly in those areas that govern the public realm, you know, the places where the public will be. I think that that's an area that we have to pay particular attention to.
Yeah, and one of the deliverables as part of the first major phase is the streetscape master plan that deals with particularly the public right-of-way in that portion of the public realm, but there will also be significant work in this first phase along the waterfront on the promenade, as well as setting the framework for the western waterfront, which is going to be one of the more significant and more heavily used public open spaces on the island. And so we will be bringing that information to you as we go through the go through the process of preparing those documents. The lead firms on those documents include CMG and AECOM. Mm-hmm. CMG is focused more on the overall picture and the streetscape master plan, and AECOM is more focused along the waterfronts. They're also working with three smaller landscape architectural firms that are planning for the public open space around Building 1, connecting to the future ferry terminal and that public realm, as well as some of the smaller neighborhood parks within the development. So we'll definitely be bringing informational presentations on that to you before bringing you the final major phase.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions, commissioners, before I yield to the public for comments? Okay, seeing none. Public comments on the director's report. Okay, seeing none. Thank you. Thank you, Bob.
Item number four, communications from and received by TIDA. There were communications this month from the Cancer Prevention Institute of California and the Navy's Residential Advisory Board minutes. There were also several residential advisories, newsletters, and media publications, among others. Calling for public comment under item number four.
Are there any public comments? None. Thank you.
Item number five, ongoing business by Board of Directors.
See none.
Great. Item number 6, consent agenda. All matters listed hereunder constitute a consent agenda, are considered to be routine by the authority board, and will be acted upon by a single vote of the authority board. There will be no separate discussions of these items unless a member of the authority board so requests, in which event the matter shall be removed from the consent agenda and considered as a separate item. Item 6A, approving the minutes of the June 11th, 2014 regular meeting. Item 6B, resolution authorizing the 18th Amendment to the Treasure Island Marina Master Lease between the authority and the United States Navy to extend the term. Item 6C, resolution authorizing the 26th Amendment to the Treasure Island Event Venues Master Lease between the authority and the United States Navy to extend the term. Item 6D, resolution authorizing the 6th Amendment to the Treasure Island Firefighting Training Center Master Lease between the authority and the United States Navy to extend the term. Item 6E, resolution authorizing the 39th Amendment to the Treasure Island Land and Structures Master Lease between the authority and the United States Navy to extend the term. Item 6F, resolution authorizing the 30th Amendment to the Treasure Island South Waterfront Master Lease between the authority and the United States Navy to extend the term. Item 6G, resolution authorizing the 10th Amendment to the Treasure Island Child Care Center Master Lease between the authority and the United States Navy to extend the term. Item 6H, resolution approving and authorizing an extension of the cooperative agreement with the United States Navy from October 1st, 2014 to September 30th, 2015. Item 6I, resolution approving and authorizing the execution of an assignment and assumption of the exclusive negotiating agreement and interim sublease and consent to assignment between Treasure Island Enterprises, LLC, a California limited liability company, and Treasure Island Marina, LLC, a California limited liability company, for the operation of the Treasure Island Marina. Item 6J, resolution retroactively approving and authorizing the execution of a second amendment to the professional services agreement between the Embarcadero YMCA, a branch of the YMCA of San Francisco, and the Treasure Island Development Authority, and the Department of Children, Youth, and Their Families to continue contract services and novation for fiscal year 2014 through 2015. Calling for public comment under item number six.
Are there any public comments on the consent calendar? I see none. Thank you. Commissioners?
I will move that item.
Second.
Okay. Calling the question. All in favor?
Aye.
It seems like all they have is. Thank you.
Okay. Item number 7, tie-dye annual report.
Good afternoon. Is this on?
No, the middle one, but let me put that.
Okay. Hi, good afternoon, commissioners. For the record, Sherry Williams from the Treasure Island Homeless Development Initiative. We actually prepared a little bit more extensive a report than an annual report for this year. There's some new commissioners, and thought there would be another new commissioner here today. But so I will hopefully go quickly through some information that you do know about us. I was able to bring some of my staff here today, Roxanne Belusic, who's the Associate Director of Tie-Dye, who also runs our Job Broker Program, and then Cheryl Hairston, who runs our services, who's our Services Director and runs our Economic Self-Sufficiency Program and our tax site and our food pantry, and Vinicio Castro, who is our Office Manager and also manages and operates our Ship-Shape Community Facility. So if there's questions on any of those aspects that they actually do, then they could answer in more detail. We did spend a little time the last year developing our message, so I wanted to just share it with you for a moment. It's the Treasure Island Homeless Development Initiative believes in the extraordinary opportunity to convert a closed military base into a new San Francisco neighborhood. We create pathways to economic self-sufficiency for low-income and formerly homeless families, adults, and veterans. Every day we facilitate lasting exits from homelessness because everyone deserves to live a life with dignity and hope. So that pretty much captures what we try to do, and this is a little bit of the history of how we were formed. 1993, Treasurer's Island is put on the closure list, and the United States government designates
City of San Francisco as a local reuse authority. In 94, the city elected to come under the Base Closure and Homeless Assistance Act, and the act requires that the local reuse authority have a homeless assistance plan as part of its reuse plan, and it also requires that they enter into a legally binding agreement with homeless representatives. And then after a series of community meetings, TIDI, the Treasure Island Homeless Development Initiative, was formed. In 95, TIDI, we submitted our notice of interest that was required under the act to the city, as to the LRA and to HUD, requesting for certain opportunities. And then in 96, we completed our negotiations with the city. We finalized our plan, and then the Board of Supervisors endorsed the plan, and HUD cited it as a model for the rest of the country, which we're very proud of. Our agreement included housing units, job opportunities for homeless and economically disadvantaged San Franciscans, economic development opportunities that employ and train people with barriers to employment, and services spaces to support formerly homeless residents in supportive housing. In 97, TIDI, we moved our office to Treasure Island. The naval station was decommissioned, and then we filed our articles of incorporation. In 98, TIDI, you all were formed. That's when John was appointed. John Elberling was appointed. And we receive our 501c3 status, and then we begin to implement all of our programs on every front: housing, employment, economic development, and services. So how we're organized is sometimes as confusing is because TIDI, we are organized to be a broker and a convener and a liaison, and we're the ones who actually have the agreement with the city. However, we're comprised of members, so it's after TIDI has actually approved a member's capacity to perform, whether or not it be a housing provider or a service provider, the TIDI member then actually directly subleases or contracts with the development authority. For example, the 250 TIDI housing units that are currently occupied on the island, they are actually managed and operated by 5 different TIDI members who have their own subleases directly with the authority. And the same is true for the services contracts like janitorial and landscaping, and the same is true for services spaces like the child care center. All of them are TIDI members, but they directly manage and operate their programs after they've been vetted by TIDI. And so in addition to being a convener, broker, and liaison, we've been a planner and an implementer for many community initiatives over the years. It has included transportation. We got Muni service out there, and we started AC Transit was actually servicing the island, and so we got Muni service. When it first started, it was once an hour for 12 hours a day, and now it's 20 every 20 minutes, almost 24 hours a day. So it's been a significant increase over the years on that. Before the gym was opened and renovated, we had a campaign to get it renovated, and TIDI then decided to do that, and then we operated it until we could get an operator. And we also, prior to the gym opening, we offered ourselves recreation classes such as yoga and aerobics classes. We've recruited the Boys and Girls Club, and we've raised money to support youth activities on the island. We work with the San Francisco Unified School District to encourage parent liaison, to encourage parent involvement, and we've organized youth leadership programs. We secured the funds for the development and the operation of the child care center, and we recruited the service provider. We developed and also the family service base where supportive services are provided by Catholic Charities and Community Housing Partnership. We've hosted numerous community events, health fairs, holiday markets, Black History Month events, back-to-school events, and this year we are coordinating our back-to-school event, which will be on August 14th, and I know that Marianne is planning to join us, as will Superintendent Carranza be there. One of the important things is that now that we no longer have a school on the island, it is important for us to keep linkages with the school district, and we often are coordinating with them and their transportation department to make sure that the children of Treasure Island have the kind of services they need to be successful in their education. We've organized large community day events and a variety of community leadership programs. So the programs that we currently provide, in addition to
all of the sort of public information we provide. As you can well imagine, people call us regularly looking for housing and different services on Treasure Island, and so we provide that service to the public, telling them how they can access housing on the island. But we also were responsible for operating the job broker system, and that is to enable employers on the island to meet their first source hiring requirements. And basically how it works is an employer, when they're looking for someone or a position, they contact us, and we have a network of referring agencies. So we don't just pull from residents of Treasure Island who are low income or formerly homeless. We also use a network of community-based organizations throughout the city who then refer to us appropriate candidates for those positions. We screen them and refer them to the employers. And then the employer makes the final decision on who to hire. And then once they've made that decision, then we inform the referring agency as well as the candidate. Currently, the types of jobs we have are mostly on-call part-time jobs, although we've gotten some more full-time jobs of late since our new partnership with San Francisco Event Venues. And we've made over 50 job placements since the beginning of this calendar year, since January. And these kind of placements, even though that they are maybe on-call or part-time, they've actually been very helpful in building resumes for people that have been out of the workforce for a while and a stepping stone to getting other employment. So they've actually been a great resource for us. And we thank the work of TIDA in assisting us, because it's through our collaboration with TIDA, with staff, with Miriam, with Jack, with the events, encouraging employers to work with us, that has made this successful. And in fact, we are sponsoring an open house for employers on July 18th. And I know that both Miriam and Bob intend to come. And we have a number of the island employers that are going to be there, plus a number of the people that have gotten jobs through the job broker program to speak and encourage other employers to participate. And in 2007, we exercised one of our economic development opportunities, which was to run either a catering company or a conference center or what have you. And so with TIDA's support, once again, we entered into a collaboration with Wine Valley Catering to manage event venues and provide catering staff. Over 100 people were hired through that program. And again, the number of people really use that to their advantage and use that as a stepping stone to finding permanent employment elsewhere. And then when Wine Valley closed in 2013, we entered into a new arrangement with San Francisco Event Venues, who runs the winery and a few other wineries on the island. And we are currently recruiting and providing staffing for the event venues that are managed by TIDA, such as La Casa de la Vista. And the community services that we provide, we primarily are responsive to what the residents have identified that they would want and they would need. And so that's why over the years, and I gave you that quick backdrop just to show you the different things that we've done, and it's primarily in response to what has been resident need. What we are currently providing is that we manage and operate the Shipshape facility. It's used for community meetings, workshops, trainings, it's a free tax preparation site. That's where residents go to vote. It also houses a business assistance center. We have a computer lab there that's open from 9 to 5, Monday through Thursday, and is free to all the residents. And it's also the site of our weekly food pantry. We just completed a renovation tomorrow. And if you can, join us. We're having an open house from 4:30 to 6:30, and we are going to be thanking a lot of people. You know, when you get property from TIDA, so you have to work on it. And TIDA is also very supportive in helping us work on it, but it takes a pretty much a village to operate one of these facilities. And so we've had folks from the Job Corps, Dan Stone from the Villages has helped us. We've had folks from Swords to Plowshares and a number of my board members. We've had funders come in. It's just really been this extensive process. And Rich Rivetti is a member of your staff who he's been very responsible for a lot of the physical improvements that you see on Treasure Island, and he can't come tomorrow. So I just wanted to quickly give him a brief acknowledgement.
because I think he's like kind of like one of those like behind the scenes guys who doesn't usually get it. So I just thought I'd say to Rich that we are presenting our certificate of appreciation for recognition and appreciation of your significant contributions to the improvement of the Shipshape Community Center on Treasure Island. Thank you very much, Rich.
Thank you very much, Rich.
So we still have a few more improvements at the Shipshape to go. As you can see, we need a new refrigerator and freezer, but we also need a new heating system and a new roof, and so that's not going to happen anytime soon. So we thought we would celebrate this first phase of improvements and hope that we can get the resources for the next year to make those final improvements. And then our economic self-sufficiency, actually, our program, it grew out of resident interest in starting their own business. They were called Tickin at the time. We held numerous craft fairs and flea markets. And then when people were interested in actually starting their own business, the whole issue of asset development came up. And so we started providing services like credit repair, second chance banking, budgeting, money management, and creating savings plans. These services are all located at the Shipshape. Again, they are free to all island residents, Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5. And it also includes a six-terminal computer lab that folks can come in and they can get help with their resume, they can do online job search, and so forth. And then we just started a few years ago a six-month program that we call the Economic Self-Sufficiency Institute, where folks identify two goals, and that has been a very successful program where people either find employment, increase their credit scores, or increase their savings. So they're really on the path to true economic self-sufficiency. We also operate the free tax site on the island, which is in conjunction with the United Way's Earn It, Keep It, Save It program. We also operate the weekly food pantry, where we provide supplemental groceries to approximately 110 households, which translates into about 300 people, many of them children. And we do that in collaboration with other community-based organizations on the island, Swords to Plowshares and Catholic Charities. And it's a very nice sort of community asset where it's a community hub where people can get to kind of know their neighbors. We also provide health screenings, cooking classes and demonstrations there as well. And it's a very, I think, valuable asset to the community and by the residents. And then we, as I've said before, we are a convener. We convene a bi-monthly housing partner meeting of all the housing partners on the island. We regularly convene youth service agencies to develop and plan youth programming on the island. We've coordinated island staff emergency preparedness events, and Roxanne is in the process right now from my staff of organizing with Peter Somerville another all-island emergency preparedness drill in October. They're planning for that right now. And then we also partner with TIDA and other community organizations, National Night Out, Halloween, and TIDA, John Stewart Company, and Tie-Dye, we all sponsor the bi-monthly community meeting. And so we look towards the future. So that's what we're doing today, and it's the interim piece that John was talking about before, and also a lot of the report that Miriam, where we all work together to provide these services and to build a community, to provide services where there was absolutely none to begin with, and to really forge a sense of belonging there on Treasure Island. But we also have this other role where we plan for the future, and you know, as of 2014, almost 6,000 formerly homeless and low-income San Franciscans have been served by our program. And so that is a great result. But we're looking forward to even more people and expanding our services when construction starts. So we are going to be spending this next year building the capacity of our job broker program so that we can access and get people ready for construction-related work, as well as our work as a one-stop for permanent employers on the island. And then lastly, we'll be identifying the affordable housing parcel that will be available first, and we will assess a timeline for creating our first replacement units. And it could be something like 2020, but we need to start now. As we know, 2020 could be here before you know it. And last but not least, of course, we will continue to build a new San Francisco neighborhood that includes formerly homeless and very low-income people from the ground up. And that is my report.
Thank you so much for that vibrant and detailed, very inspiring
report.
Commissioner Mazzola?
Yeah. Sherry, I just want to begin by thanking you and your staff that's here today for the great job that you guys do. I think it's awesome what you guys are doing and helping people that need it. So I wanted to commend you guys for that. Thanks for being here, for your staff and all that you do. Can you just briefly expand on what you said in the beginning of your presentation as far as how tie-dye is in relationship with HUD and how that works and the funding you get from them? Well,
HUD, under the Base Closure and Homeless Assistance Act, they actually had to approve the homeless assistance submission that was part of the reuse plan. So when we submitted it in 1996, they actually had to approve it for the city. And so that was their role at that point. We tie-dye itself does not get any HUD funding anymore. We did in 10 or 15 years ago, but not anymore.
Oh, okay. That's kind of where I was going. Okay,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Commissioner Dunlop.
I just wanted to thank you. You do a lot. And, I mean, without, much of a staff, so you all must be just working 24 hours a day and more if it was possible. I mean, it really is crazy. I see you at all these things and all the work you're doing with the neighborhood, and I just know how deeply you're appreciated. And so I am grateful for your hard work and your staff's hard work. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Yes, I really appreciated that history and the long list of services that you provide. And I really think that your organization is an example of how you can include services for the homeless as part of a whole neighborhood community development. So kudos to you and to your staff.
Thank you, yes.
And I know that it's a great team, that it takes, collaboration with all the other service providers as well. But we really appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
And I wanted to echo the sentiments of my fellow commissioners. Thank you, Cheryl. I've been on the island several times, and we read reports. I think it's worth noting that your tie-dye is the only one of its kind of such a program in the country. And so I think a lot of people are going to be watching. I would not be surprised if you've been getting calls all over the country. I think those of us here are commissioners. We've already over and over and over stated to you how much we appreciate your work. And as long as we're here, we're going to make sure that our services that we provide to make sure that you can continue to do your work, you can count on that. Those of us sitting here. Because we know the lives of the people that you represent and trying to provide for. We look at all the nonprofits, service providers, the Boys and Girls Club, YMCA, Catholic Charities, and we can go on and on. They provide viable services, and that's what it's making the Treasure Island development a jewel, a one of its kind in San Francisco that other folks are going to emulate. And I'm also say here, we want to thank your, the city agencies. Of recent, Barbara Garcia, Department of Public Health, has a clinic in there. So we are actually taking health fairs and resources out to the island. And you have this kind of collaboration. And so with the job brokers, I think your pledges, absolutely, that's going to be key into ensuring that the residents and get the opportunity to better their lives. So hats off to you. And thank you for this great report, and we look forward to working with you and your staff. And Mr. Favetti, you make us proud, and we have great staff out here. Thank you, sir, for your work, too, in reaching out to tie-dye. So I'm going to open up now. There are no commissioners' comments, further comments to public comments.
I just wanted to make one last comment, and that is that we do work really closely with all the TIDA staff, and you have an awesome staff, and we all really appreciate that. And then I will say that the tie-dye staff is also pretty darn awesome, too, and we do all work really hard, not 24 hours a day exactly, but we do all work hard because we are motivated by our mission, for sure. But also, I just wanted to mention the other island partners like the John Stewart Company and Dan Stone. I mean, all of us out on the island, we work, I think, in a very unique collaborative fashion that you don't see in other neighborhoods, and it's very rewarding as a result of that, and I do think as a result we are able to get a lot more done. And it includes also all the tie-dye member agencies that also work in collaboration with all of us. So thank you very much for all your support.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. And I am going to open that for public comments. Are there any public comments? Okay, none. Thank you.
Item number 8, TIMA Congestion Pricing Studies Update.
Members of the board, we had a presentation from the Transportation Authority, I believe it was at the April meeting, as they were beginning the work on the congestion pricing studies, and wanted to come back and give you an update on the initial modeling runs that have been done. To present to you today is Frank Ferger, who is leading the consultant team, working with the Transportation Authority staff on this modeling effort. And I'll turn it over to Frank.
Thank you, Bob. Good afternoon, Chair and board members. I'm pinch hitting for Rachel Hyatt, who's away at a conference today. So our agenda today is to review the planning precedent, the goals and objectives of the TI-TIP, review the initial demand performance, and give you an update on the outreach and the next steps. So the planning precedent is the TI-TIP, which was adopted in 2011. As you probably all are aware, the key principles of the TI-TIP was to discourage driving and encourage the use of transit, walking, and biking. Pricing strategies such as tolling and parking pricing will fund the services and other TDM efforts. And the parking pricing and the tolling will also hopefully help discourage driving and especially driving alone. TIMA will manage the program and will monitor the performance of the system. And a key program goal of the system is to have greater than 50% non-auto share of total trips. So walking through the demand performance, our modeling started with the base assumptions that are in the TI-TIP. Tolling would be only for the residents in the baseline. The visitors and non-residents were not tolled. Tolling is only during the AM and PM peak periods. And HOV3 would be exempt from tolling. On the transit side for the base assumptions, the TI-TIP called for a very high quality transit service with convenient headways. So the baseline assumes ferry transit service every 15 minutes from the island to San Francisco. It assumes 10-minute headways for buses, AC Transit, running from the island to Oakland. And it assumes Muni running 7.5 minutes to the Trans Bay Center and 12 minutes to the Civic Center. So in addition to the baseline, we ran a second scenario. And in the second scenario, we kept everything constant except for changing certain assumptions in the tolling. And so in this scenario, residents, employees, and visitors were tolled. And we also extended the hours of tolling from just being the peak period in the baseline to tolling through all congested times, which is both the AM and the PM peak, and then through the midday afternoon and on the weekends. And then the HOV requirement remained the same. So this slide shows, this is the first of the comparisons between the two scenarios, and this shows the expected trip making in 2030. The total trips it goes down slightly in scenario two from the baseline. But the, as you can see in the graph, the total trips remain pretty close to the same in both scenarios. A key metric is that in both the baseline scenario and scenario two, about 75% of the trips are from residents, and approximately 81% of the trips are on or off the island. So this slide shows the distribution of trips throughout the day. And as you can see, there's very little change between the two scenarios. Another thing to point out is there's a very high percentage of trips in the midday. We believe that this high percentage of trips in the midday supports the concept of tolling throughout the day and beyond just the peak periods. Showing the origins and destinations for trips on and off the island, as would be expected, the vast majority of the trips are to or from San Francisco. About 24% of the trips go to the East Bay, and a very small percentage, 1% to the North Bay and 6% to the South Bay. So in evaluating the performance of scenario one versus scenario two, one thing to point out is that we're still below our 50% goal of transit usage. But we do see a slight increase as we go from scenario one to scenario two. There's about a 5% increase in total transit usage in scenario two from scenario one. And the other positive is scenario two has approximately 12% less drive alone trips than scenario one. So we are seeing some positives as we move to scenario two. This summarizes the transit ridership, and with most of those trips going to San Francisco and with most of the trips, a good percentage of the trips being in transit, as would be expected, the SF bus has the most demand. It's also the least expensive, and it has the highest frequency. So there's a lot of usage from the Muni service. The bus to Oakland is the AC Transit is the sole service to the East Bay. Positives about the AC service is it has a very high fare box recovery, so it's a very cost-effective service getting people to the East Bay. The ferry service has the least demand. It also has the least frequent service, and it's the most expensive service as far as a fare. The one thing we have not completely captured yet are the recreational trips. The recreational trips are difficult to predict. They're not fully accounted for. We're working on trying to quantify those trips and put a dollar amount on those. So we'll bring that back at our next presentation. In looking at the intra-island trips, a very high percentage of the trips are bike or walk. Over 80% of the trips are non-auto trips. We'd still like to get those vehicle trips down below the 18%, but we do have a fairly high percentage at this point in the two scenarios that are non-vehicular. As far as the traveler profile of who is getting tolled, scenario one tolled only residents, so it's 100% residents. In scenario two, we did find that there was a big increase in the number of trips that were tolled by extending it both to the midday and by extending it to visitors. We do find that the bulk of the people that are being tolled, though, are still residents. About 67% are residents. So in summarizing, in looking at these first two scenarios, midday congestion doesn't shift back to the peaks when we bring tolling to the midday, which is a positive. The transit mode share increases as we go from scenario one to scenario two. Driving alone and VMT both decrease as we go from scenario one to scenario two. And overall, the trip-making demand remains constant. So our next steps, we're going to test some additional scenarios and hopefully increase the peak period transit mode share as a result of some of those scenarios. So going quickly through the outreach, we anticipate that the outreach will gear up probably in the next couple of months. In 2014, the outreach will include introducing TIMA, what the agency does, what the roles and responsibilities of TIMA is. We'll engage with key project stakeholders, outreach to the residents, and ask them to participate in surveys, get some feedback on the proposed program, as well as developing a website and fact sheets. The outreach will gear up in intensity in 2015. We'll have community meetings, and then we'll also look to incorporate the input from our earlier outreach into revised policies. Some of the organizations and agencies that we'll be partnering and reaching out to as part of the outreach: Treasure Island Villages, the Catholic Charities, Treasure Island Community Groups, some of our partner agencies, the TIDA Board, the CAB. We have formed a technical advisory committee, and we've had our first technical advisory committee meeting. We'll also be meeting on a regular basis with our partners, MTC, Muni, AC Transit, WIDA, and Caltrans. Looking at the project schedule, we hope to have our policy options and recommendations finalized by, and the demand analysis finalized by the end of this year. Study recommendations will be brought to this board in early 2015. In the fall, we'll be starting systems engineering. There are proposals in right now. We hope to have a selection for a firm to begin the systems engineering, which will extend through systems design and the installation of the congestion pricing equipment into 2017. As Bob mentioned earlier, the first phase of construction is scheduled to be complete late 2017 or early 2018, and so we hope to open the congestion pricing and have the programs in place late 2017 or early 2018 when the first occupancy occurs. So next steps, we're going to continue the outreach. We are going to continue additional demand and financial modeling, which will test additional transit service plans and alternative toll policies. So I would
thank you.
Open it up to any questions.
Yes, please. And I wanted to start by thank you for that presentation. The EDC-MOA, I think, where we are right now is really great. That's why we hired SFCTA to guide this process. So looking at the data, this is a time stamp on where we are right now. And we know that the EDC-MOA and the Transportation Demand System in the program actually calls for every phase of development that we do an analysis, transportation analysis, to see where we are, to make sure so that we can assess some of the scenarios that are in place and we be in phase. So we have the flexibility to go back. One of the things that we know going in, and I know is going to happen throughout this stuff, is that the transit ridership, most importantly, the ferry service, water transportation is going to be a key here. And I know right now, you're correct, is the least used and is very expensive. Somehow, in our TDM, we need to focus on how we're going to change behavior and, again, provide the resources that's going to allow us to maximize that gold mine, the water transportation. Everyone in the city and places that we talk to and all of that are really looking at us to maximize, because right now the bottleneck, even after all the infrastructure and road improvement, we already now know what is right down there, the Bay Bridge, the second most used bridge in the country. we already know that. And even with tolling and all of that, there are reports that indicate that you can make it $30 an hour. People are still going to find some ways to go to work. They're going to find a way around that. And so it's not going to do that. So we need to look at the alternatives now or how we can, and water transportation everywhere I look is coming at me in a way that I have not envisioned before. And this transportation is going to be key to everything we are doing in the island. If we are going to foresee 8,000 people living there and a point of destination, that's where we got to be creative. Everything we put on that island, it will not mean anything if we don't do that. So this is very important, and thank you for all this you've given here. So moving forward, that area there, we need to really see now, to expand as to how we're going to maximize every mode of transportation that we bring in there. In fact, less emphasis on the vehicular and all of that. And so I just want to point that out, that I'm very passionate about the transportation aspect of this development project, and we're going to make sure that we raise all the questions as we go forward. Commissioner Fassian, please.
Yes. I'd like to clarify what the analysis that you're doing is going to, in the end, result in recommendations on the modes of transportation as well as the pricing for if tolling is one of the methods to manage demand?
We tested the baseline scenarios, which we're assuming will be the guiding principles, that there will be tolling, there will be paid parking, there will be ferry service. The scenarios we're running right now are to test how best to structure and right-size those services so they meet the travel demand as well as being financially feasible.
And the scenarios, they're based on assumptions of different modes of usage. And is that based on current actual use, or is it based on predicted use?
It's predicted based on the travel demand model that's in use at the SFCTA. And so our travel demand modeling, when we have certain assumptions that the ferry headways will be 15 minutes versus 30 minutes, or trade-offs for who gets tolled, or the different transit service levels, the travel demand model then, we then get the results from the travel demand model regarding total trips per mode.
Mm-hmm. And so these two scenarios that you've tested actually doesn't result in too much difference in the number of trips. As I see, you know, the expected trip making, there's only 100 trips difference between scenario one and scenario two of non-residents. And it's a very slight difference between these two scenarios. Is that correct?
That's correct. And unfortunately, we were only able today to show you one part of the modeling. The second part that this feeds into is the financial results. And we're still working on the financial results. The baseline scenario and the assumptions there and the scenario number two will have substantially different financial results, as will the third scenario and the fourth scenario, which we are developing right now. It's unlikely that we're going to reduce the total number of trips. The emphasis is changing the modal split to increase the number of transit trips.
Mm-hmm. Well, the assumptions then become very important, mm-hmm. because the inputs that go in will have some impact on the outputs and on the financial implications. And I guess my question is, the scenario definition that you have is a very, I think, aggressive one, in stating that there would be muni service every 7.5 minutes to the island, every 12 minutes to Civic Center, and every 10 minutes to the Oakland side. I wish my neighborhood right now has that type of memory service. I know it doesn't. And so I'm just wondering whether it's accurate in what if the service level which the city or the Muni can afford or will do is does not meet this every 7.5 minutes assumptions that you have.
It is a very aggressive transit service, and that the intention was to provide a very aggressive and frequent headway transit service to promote the use of transit and to encourage people to use transit rather than their cars. The financial modeling that was done and presented in the financial assumptions in the TTIP, which is the guiding document, assumed those headways. So as a start, we wanted to test those base assumptions of, as you said, very, very aggressive transit service and make sure that that was financially feasible. So we will come back to the board with the financial results as well as our next scenarios and present to you our base assumptions based on the adopted TTIP as well as any differences from the TTIP in scenarios that we test.
Well, but if you don't have this level of service, it is assuming a level of service which is aggressive and which is not actually even in effect today. And if you don't have, for instance, the Muni service that is required, then don't you then have to use other modes of transit, and including the ferries, as a possible alternative?
Yes. Our initial analysis shows that we will need this aggressive transit service, including the 7.5 and 10-minute Muni headways and the 20-minute AC transit headways. We will need that level of service in order to meet the performance standards that are specified in the TTIP. And as I showed in a couple of these slides, even with those aggressive services, transit services, we still haven't quite met that 50% threshold that we would like to. So we're going to continue to tweak some of these scenarios, look at options to get more people on the ferries and out of their cars.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, my comment is actually also related to Commissioner Richardson's comment, which is that right now, yes, the ferry is perhaps the least in demand because it's not operating. People don't know about it. It's least frequent and it's most expensive. And that the fact is that recreational trips may be hard to predict because, again, we haven't had a full array of services and places to go and activities to do yet on Treasure Island. But how do you predict that for the future? In your model, it may not be existing now, but, you know, will there not be increased demand as people know more about what's available?
Specifically to the ferry?
To the ferry.
Yes, we're working very closely with WIDA in developing the assumptions for this modeling. We've met with WIDA a couple of times. We're going to meet with them again next week. We're looking to them to provide some input based on their experience and their existing services and using that as a model to help us fine-tune the results for the Treasure Island demand.
Okay. Well, I think my concern is just that it is a very aggressive model. It's not what is actually being provided as far as service right now. So if it's not even today being met and it's being used, and those are the assumptions that are mm-hmm. being used, I would be concerned about whether it's then really a useful model or not.
Again, we are in this modeling process. Mm-hmm. We did not initiate these headways. We were basing this on the earlier studies that were done and adopted by the respective boards, which is the TTIP, and that model no argument. It is a very, very aggressive transit service. But we believe that we need to start with that as a baseline, mm-hmm. since that is what was promised and agreed upon as part of the development agreement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then will you revise it, or will you make suggestions in your report?
Right. As we go through and we test, as I said, we've tested two scenarios. We anticipate testing at least two more. And in addition to doing the demand modeling, which I reviewed today, we will come back and show you the financial results of each of these. And we can show what the capital impact will be in each year, as well as the cumulative capital costs, and most importantly, the operating cost, and whether the various scenarios can be operationally feasible and financially feasible.
Thank you, Commissioner Dunlop.
Thank you very much. Has it been considered at all of having transit-only lanes, or, considering the amount of traffic that's going to be added to the bridge when the project is completed, to perhaps have a HOV lane from the island to the city, or perhaps all the way from Oakland to the city? Has that been a consideration? Or
I can't speak to anything beyond the bridge right away, what Caltrans is proposing. But to the best of my knowledge, there has been no consideration for a bus-only lane all the way from Treasure Island to the city. As far as the limits of what our project is covering, that would be the local streets and roads within Treasure Island, and then the ramps. There will be HOV bypasses on the ramps. There is a bus-only ramp to San Francisco, and our initial analysis is that there isn't the right-of-way within the local streets and roads to have a bypass lane on the local streets and roads. There isn't sufficient room.
And then also, does any of these scenarios take in consideration, then, there'll be like perhaps 25% of the housing units will be affordable, and will there be discounts for those people in that income bracket, and maybe leveled pricing or something to encourage more participation for people who have less economic ability to pay for for transit?
That analysis will be included as part of a future scenario.
Okay. Thank you.
It's all right. I have a question on the financials. I know we don't have it. It would be great to maybe point to us. We'd like to revisit the financials. And also an advice when you go that to really the true cost. You mentioned about the operation. And again, I'm having Ferry to make sure that I don't think at this point we know something is going to be expensive. The operations or whatever, but I think it's great to be able to project or have something approximate true cost of whatever it's going to take, because we're going to have private investors. We're going to have probably a government subsidy and, MTC. If we're able to project, because looking at this development, some of those government agencies at some point will have to chip in to the cost to offset the cost, and I'm sure the MTC well, I just look at that data. So when we get to the financials, let's just go beyond the call of duty and call it what it is and say this is what it is. It might be expensive. It would then spur other forms of conversation. So the bigger picture of basically what we need to invest in now to alleviate this, because tolling alone is not going to even do that, and even for the something there. This alternate transportation, believe me, are going to be the key that will help us to offset, what we are doing. So thank you. Okay. Commissioner Dunlop, none? Okay. Are there any questions on this end? If not, please, on the public comments, please.
Hi, Roxanne Belusik from Tie-Dye. Some of the questions are more detailed, so they're probably for down the road, so I'll just touch on them. Thank you, Commissioner Dunlop, for mentioning the discounts. That's a big issue, is what's the price going to be? Will they be discounted? Are they going to get recharged if it's more than 90 minutes since they left the island? I mean, there's a lot of details like that that are going to be critically important to the population that we serve. But I do have one thing that I thought maybe I'd mention. I don't know if you had contacted. There is a bike shop that's on the island. Did you know that? And they rent bikes. It might be something to get a hold of, because I noticed you had bikes and you would like to increase that. I can give you the contact information for that if you need it. And then on the paid parking side, it would be kind of the same thing. Are there going to be discounts, things like that? And is there going to be a disability pass available for those that maybe are riding with someone? Someone is providing the transit for them, and they're disabled. So just sort of things like that that are going to cover our population. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Are there any other public comments? Okay, so this discussion is going to continue going. Rich, none? Okay. Thank you, sir, for the presentation. So we'll be having this discussion ongoing. Okay, next on the agenda.
Item number 9, progress report on surveys of Treasure Island homes.
Good afternoon, Board Chair Richardson and Board Commissioners. My name is Patricia McFadden. I am the Base Operations Manager for the Navy's Base Realignment and Closure Office. I serve Treasure Island as well as the other closed Navy bases in the San Francisco Bay Area. Thank you for allowing this opportunity to give you an update on our residential surveys as part of our radiological cleanup. Let me start by reiterating the message that our director, Laura Dushnak, provided at your April meeting on Treasure Island. The health and safety of the residents, workers, and visitors at Treasure Island remains our highest priority. There are no immediate health risks that have been found to date at Treasure Island as part of our entire cleanup program. We also remain committed to keeping TIDA and the public informed, so we appreciate this opportunity. As we discussed at the TIDA board meeting in April, as well as our May 31st public meeting on the island, we have started the surveys as of June 12th, 2014, in coordination with TIDA, the housing service providers, and the regulatory agencies. I'd like to take this opportunity to voice my appreciation personally, as well as the Navy's, for the tremendous support we've gotten from TIDA, the various housing providers at the island. It's through them that we really can do this big effort to do these residential surveys. I'd also like to say that, you know, the residents have been very understanding and very cooperative. We understand this is a big inconvenience to them on the day that we're there. And in general, they have been very cooperative, and it's given us an opportunity to answer the questions that they may have while we're there on site. So we appreciate that. Just for your reference, this is a figure of Site 12. That's the cleanup site name, obviously, for Treasure Island. It is the residential area, and this is where we are doing the surveys of all the leased units in the housing area. And just in these figures, the lighter green area indicates some of our solid waste disposal areas. As a brief outline of the way we have planned the survey to be completed, the goal, of course, is to conduct radiological surveys of all the leased housing units within Site 12 on Treasure Island, and we're using equipment to scan the ground floor of all units. Obviously, this requires a lot of logistics, including moving furniture and belongings so that we can get access to all the ground floor spaces. But so far, it's been working out quite well. Obviously, a key component of this is to coordinate with TIDA as the master leaseholder, and then as all the subleases are with the housing service providers. This is key in planning the proper notice and accessing the facility, each residence. We've met every Thursday. We do a 3-week plan ahead. That's worked really well so that we can give residents proper notices and work out any issues as they arise. The Navy's committed to providing the results to TIDA within 2 weeks, and we've been able to meet that so far. Part of this is also coordinating all aspects of the survey with the regulatory agencies. The key visual part of that is that California Department of Public Health representatives have been on site every day during the surveys. They're there to also help answer any resident questions and also to oversee the Navy's work. Here's an example of one of the things we did prior to the survey starting. We held an orientation. We invited the regulatory agencies as well as the housing providers to see how the surveys would be done. On the left, you see the equipment. It's a little hard to see. It's quite small. That is the radiation technician who would be operating the survey detector there. On the right side, if we are to find an elevated level, we use this transparency to collect some additional data where we find it, and that helps gather the information while we're there so we don't have to disturb the resident twice. Here's some examples of what the survey looks like in the field. On the left is one of the garages in the 1400 series. These are separate garages. They're not connected to the housing units. The goal is to survey 100% of the ground, so you can see we have to move furniture, boxes, whatever might be stored in there, either out of the unit, or typically we can just move it aside so that we can have access to that area. And then on the right, because as part of doing the 100% survey, it's gridded out into 1 meter by 1 meter squares. And what you're seeing on the right is after we've surveyed that 1 meter square unit, a static measure is taken. That's a data point for that area. So where are we to date? As of Monday the 7th, we've had 17 full days of surveying. There are 794 units that are to be surveyed, and we have, as of Monday, surveyed 300 of them. That includes units and garages. The plan was for 12 units per day. We've actually been able to average 17, which we're very pleased with. We'd like to get this completed so that we have the answers for all the residents and interested parties. We have provided the results of the surveys to TIDA for 189 of the units. That's as of yesterday. And those are all within the two-week period. We have had one reading so far that's been above the background. It was in a vacant unit. It did not pose any immediate risk. Early review indicates that it's below the 10 millirem per year. That was our action level. But that data is still being validated, and we have committed to getting that to TIDA by the 14th, which is the two-week window. And then even though it is below the action level, we will continue to assess that point of interest and determine what our future actions will be. On the right side, you see an example of the survey receipt. We leave that with each resident, either hand it to the resident or tape it to a specific area so that they know that we've been there, that if they have any questions, our point of contact is there. The technician actually signs it so they know who was in their space. And that gives them just the knowledge that we have been there. Some have chosen to be present, some have not, but it's a way for us to let them know that we've completed it. So at this point, I can answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Before I open this for question, I want to acknowledge Ms. Amy Brunell, environmental engineer, San Francisco Department of Public Health, who has also been providing support throughout this cleanup process. And Mr. Dear Commissioner Dunlop, so thank you, Amy, for being here.
Thank you. I just had some questions that you've probably heard before, but what is the area average of the, MRM per year, or if there is such a figure? Vacant unit, there you found a level was at 10.
10 is our action level. So if we find 10 above the background,
Oh, so what is the background? What is the background there?
Background varies based on there could be naturally occurring items that have a radiation thing. We actually brought some of our posters from our public meeting. Radiation is comes from some natural sources as well as some man-made sources. We're obviously looking for the man-made sources that the Navy utilized. So 10 millirem per year was determined to be, when you consider it above background, something that we would need to look further into. So it's not a determination based on what we expected. So there isn't a set background. What we do is you take a background measurement and then you subtract it out of your measurement that you're taking.
Right. Yeah, I guess it would vary if there's granite there, if there's, some other materials. But this is one thing I've heard from many residents, that they'd just like to see, what is the average, let's say, in San Francisco? What's the average in Sacramento? What's the average if there's some figures like that can kind of help people get a better grasp on it?
Do you want to talk to that, Bob?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to point out, over here we have one of the boards that we had at the open house. And as a frame of reference, the average radiation exposure of an American resident is 624 millirem per year. So that gives you a picture of what all of us, through the course of our daily lives, through medical procedures, airplane trips, smoking cigarettes, that's an average exposure for a United States resident. And on Treasure Island, just the background radiation from cosmic exposure from the sun on Treasure Island at sea level is 24 millirem per year. So those are kind of two measures that kind of give you some context. Some of the other things that are on the board, a mammogram is a 30 millirem exposure. That gives you kind of some of the benchmarks that we wanted to try and provide for residents.
So then the one thing they found is then it's still lower. Let's just say generally, it's below. What they found was below the 10 millirem. But even 10 millirem is something you could have a picnic and not feel too concerned.
So what that doesn't mean we will look into what it is, because what we are looking for are the readings that will indicate something that is likely the man-made object, not a regional level. And so if we find something that indicates it could be a specific item, then we're going to follow up in the future to remove that. So, but the millirem indicates, especially because we're in people's residences, we wanted to give it the level that said, this is one we don't need to worry about at all. It's a conservative measure. And then, of course, we'll assess anything specifically as we find. So it's basically we need to further analyze this so that we can answer the additional questions that we have about it.
Yeah, I'm afraid if you give any number, it's going to cause concern.
Yeah.
If it's not zero.
Yeah.
And, so I was at that open house, too, and I guess I probably looked at that, and the numbers kind of went in and out.
Yeah.
Because I also know that many of the people who have asked me these questions, what is it to hear that there, were also there. So, any additional, as much as you can let people know, what really is natural and how high can natural go? Because I understand it's a lot higher near the mountains or if you're
correct.
In Yosemite.
Elevation,
or
like Denver. And, right. And I, having been personally at some of the residences in the mornings when we're, gaining access and answering questions, that has been a general question about will it make me sick? Will it cause any risk? And I've appreciated the opportunity to answer those questions and provide some additional information that those residents may not have been at the public meeting. So I think it's a great opportunity to answer those directly through this process. So we're certainly maximizing that as well.
Thank you.
Yes, please. I want to ask a question here, and I want to go back to the status to date.
status today.
Although it is too premature to start celebrating, but so far you've had 300 residential units.
Correct.
So occupied units, is that right?
Occupied and unoccupied.
Unoccupied?
Yeah, and about 225 or so of those are occupied.
So I think the status report today is great, although we have to be very cautious of that because we still have, according to 794 units.
Yes.
I think it's encouraging that we're going ahead, but the status today from what you've seen, if you look at the statistics of the data and the fact that the one case of the non-vacant or unit that even the regulators are looking at that data right now to trying to see. But I think in conveying this information to the residents, I think it's very important at this point because it's the way, before we get into all the technical things, that there's families that have undergone through this. Because, again, the concern for each and every one of us here is that, you know, we're going to go into the survey and every other house or something like that, but that's not the case here. Yeah. So statistically, I think what we have so far is very encouraging, although we need to exercise some great caution here. We cannot rest until all the rest of the units are completed, and then we'll be able to analyze the data. Is that correct?
Agreed. We are working with TIDA. Obviously, we notified Bob directly once we found it, and then we've had ongoing discussions about various scenarios that we might have in an occupied unit and what we might find. So we're trying to prepare ahead and obviously address any resident concerns first and foremost.
And the equipment you're using are very sensitive. I remember in one of the public meetings, even in a public room, where they were going around and testing, they detected. Those instruments are very sensitive. They detected some background or radiation levels, even in that room. And I'm sure if they bring some here to City Hall, it would be very interesting. So, again, the comforting thing here is that this survey is ongoing by the experts, and we have Department of Public Health, our Department of providing also our support, and we also have the regulatory agencies are there that will be taking the data so that the independent analysis will be done before we can rest here. So thank you again for your efforts.
Agreed.
I do not see any here, so I'm going to ask public comments on your report. Please, are there any public comments? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item number 10, discussion of future agenda items by directors.
Seeing none. Okay, I think we're done. Yes, thank you again, all of you today, for this exciting and wonderful meeting. And congratulations, Cheryl, and to our partners. See you next time. Thank you.
It seems like JB is taking a lot of care in how they get
coached. I
said we have a conference call on Friday, I think.
Friday,
too?
Okie
dokie.
Yeah, I think there was a early on missteps.
Yes.